because the continuation of the pasuk va'yatar Yitzchak lenochach ishto ki akarahi. What's the next word? Va'yaser lo. So what does that mean literally? Hashem answered him. Vatar Rivka ishto. So the word ayin taf reish means on the one hand soliciting, the other hand answering. Yitzchak is soliciting Hashem, and Hashem is answering. And yesterday, close the door, we spoke about vayetar, meaning you're shoveling, you're trying to dig. So what type of word could possibly describe both a human
initiative and a divine response? That's a strange word. Normally we think there's a gap. There's a distance between human behavior and human experience in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here, Vayetar Yitzchak Lenochach Ishto Vayaser Lo. The fact that Hashem answers Tfilos, we know, we've spoken about that a lot, but why the same word? And why that word that connotes digging? What's Hashem digging? Yitzchak's digging, we spoke about the toil of Tfilah, the need to work hard, the need to repeat your steps, the need to maybe psychologically dig within yourself, but... So the fact that vayetar and vayater are used in the same context gives a whole different image to digging. Sometimes you dig deep into the ground. Sometimes you dig laterally to get somewhere else. Unfortunately, we've seen in Israel over the last decade where underground tunnels have been used to try to get from one location to another for menacing purposes, for violent purposes. Sometimes they're used for other purposes to create a living space in climates that are more difficult. So you dig sometimes where the access above ground isn't always convenient, or isn't always safe, and you dig to get to it. So that image is of Yitzchak digging, not tefillah, digging away at his davening, but digging towards Hashem, digging to try to reach that keshu with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if Hashem's also digging, or at least the repetition of that term, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so essentially Hashem is trying to meet Yitzchak, is trying to get to Yitzchak just as much as Yitzchak is trying to get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there are two points here. The obvious point is that, I've told you, we've said this so often, I hope by now it should be obvious to you, tefillah is an encounter with Hashem. One part of that encounter is the kavana you have with the words you say. So much else of that encounter has nothing to do, Kesher, please close, has nothing to do with how much kavana and what words you say, but just feeling that you stood in front of Hashem. So if you're trying to mark yourself to have a successful tefillah, it can't begin and end by how much kavana you had. So you feel like you felt like a Baruch Hu. Did you walk into his makom, matovu lecha Yaakov? Did you think about Hashem? Did you feel frustrated you're not thinking about Hashem? It's an encounter, it's just conscious. It doesn't always have to be that perfect tefillah. Tefillah comes in many gradations and variations. But the other part is, as much as it's hard for me to explain to you, and I can't explain it to you, as much as you want HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He wants you. Chazal say, which is itself a very morally challenging statement, but we won't discuss the moral connotations of it right now, just the connotations with tefillah, that all of our imahos were akaros, all of them were barren, one after another. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is misavel tefilasan shel tzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants tzadikim, and He'll make decisions in their lives that will prompt them to daven. Now, morally, it's very hard to understand, but that's a larger question of the role of the tzaddik and why a tzaddik has harsh judgment and what it takes to be a tzaddik. So we're not going to open that whole line of questioning, but what do you mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the tefillah of a tzaddik, Hashem? I mean, He desires it. What does it mean for Hashem to desire? I can't explain it to you. I just know that it's true. There's certain things that the human mind can't wrap itself around. That's the way Hashem created His world. Very famous Rashi in the beginning of Bechukosai. Very important Rashi. Now that we're getting closer to the Hanukkah break. In Bechukosai Teilecho, Ves Mitzvasai Tishbru Vasisem Olsam. What does Rashi say? Kadosh Baruch Hu Misaveh Shetu Ameilam Matara. Hashem craves that you should be a masmid. That's an important statement, because if you're not a masmid, it doesn't mean you're a failure. It just means you're not hitting that high note. Hashem craves it means it's not something which is going to be available to everyone, but it's a special, quote-unquote, treat to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you're spending Yom HaValayah in the basement. Hashem's happy. Hashem wants it. As if Hashem wants something from you. Hashem has no need. Somehow, in this religious encounter and experience that He created, Hashem needs us. And Hashem needs your tefillah to feel close to you the same way you need tefillah to feel close to him. That's the connotation of the pasuk. Vayeser lo Yitzchak vayaser lo. And Hashem needs masmidim to study his will. What does it even mean? But that's how Chazal spoke to us. And of course, at a national level, that's the book of Shir Shirim. Kadosh Baruch Hu is courting us. Kadosh Baruch Hu is knocking at the door. Kol Dodi Dofek. Hashem needs us to be part of history. Hashem needs us to respond to historical challenges. And he can't come in. He has to knock on the door and he has to wait for us to open the door. I can't explain that to you. Kadosh Baruch Hu is Melo Kol Haaretz Kivodo. He's Mekom HaShekol HaOlam. Hashem makes doors. But somehow, in this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we created a system where human beings dictate, and not just the human beings dictate in a Kabbalistic sense. And in Bapi Kabbalah, Hashem was limited, and we have to unleash the Melech Asur Bar Hatim. So that's a cosmological reality of bringing Hashem's presence. But somehow, Hashem wants, needs, and craves. And just like we're digging to the Rabbanu Shalom, Vayeser Lo Yitzchak, Vayeser Lo, he's, again, the literal translation means he answers, but the imagery of atar, of digging, is a joint imagery for a human being, for a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's a very powerful sense of tefillah. So think about that. The next time you're trying to find the Rabbonu Shel Olam and find that sense of kesher and connection, right, it's always easier to relate to someone when you feel that person wants you also, right? If you feel that person wants to learn with you, b'chavrusa, or wants to go out with you, or wants to be your friend, or wants to, whatever it is, if you feel wanted, or you feel that person is making the same effort, it's a bilateral relationship, it's a mutual relationship. If you feel like you're carrying the load and just trying to find someone who's not interested, it's a whole different dynamic, whole different experience. So it's a really, really important pasuk. Interesting that Chazal didn't point to what is davening. Just because we're going to run out of time and not going to have a chance to discuss Vayetze with you, so I'll talk about Vayetze's tefillos in the end of this week. There's a beautiful medrash about this davening. Lenochach ishto. Of course, this is really one of the sources for Mechitza, because he stands up, lenochach, you know, opposed to, so to speak, at a bit of a distance. Keep in mind, part of the problem with dealing with halachas of Mechitza is that it was such an obvious experience for so many hundred of years that you don't really have the fine-tuning halachic discussions you have about Hilchos Shabbos and Muktzah. In most cases, women just didn't come to shul. The shuls were just so limited in their size that, you know, it just... So, if you said the word mechitza 500 years ago, I don't know what you're talking about. Chatzitza? Metzitza? Like, did I get that wrong? Was I invited to the wrong shir? What does a mechitza mean? Oh, he must be learning sukkah or erevin or kalayim. Okay, obviously, I'm exaggerating. In most cases, people barely had shuls. It was a room. It was a little hut. So, they daven. And when they did, it was just an obvious, you make a mechitza. It wasn't something that was parsed. What's the gather of Mechitza? How far? How high? You really have just basically modern discussions in a Moshe Feinstein and equivalent poskim. So this is really part of where it starts, Sigmar and Sukkah, about the Ezra's Nashim, during Sigmar's Beis Hashoeva, but it's not as if you go, oh, what does the Ritva say? What does the Rashba say? What does the Beis Yosef say? What should Bali Alakit say? You don't have the same volume of information, which is what makes the conversation such a delicate one, because it really speaks about Masara and not just finding this Makar and that Makar. But in any event, there's a beautiful medrash where Yitzchak is davening lenochach ishto. It doesn't just mean his positioning, but he's desperate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please don't make me marry a hagar. Please let me have children from this tzaddik. Because he's awed by Rivka. She came from such a background. He's just awed by her. A lot of boys were in yeshiva this week, visiting. So inevitably, some of the boys... I always ask the question, our goal is, and I think you've seen this, and I think we try to pull it off as best we can, is we want to have some degree of homogeneity. You're not just taking the boys that have learned 500 blot in high school already, but boys that we feel, when placed into this environment, will really start to perform and really start to develop deep religious commitment and deep commitment to Talmud Torah. And some boys who come from maybe more homogeneous situations where everyone, they're looking to replicate that. I'm trying to tell them what not only should yeshiva aim to try to create space and opportunities for boys, whatever, learned a little bit less in high school, but maybe in their own setting, you know, if they were in high school, they didn't stress learning as much, maybe the commitment it took for them to learn Daf Yomi or Shnei Mikravecha Targum was even more than your commitment to learn that extra hour. But also, you'll gain from that perspective. Yitzchak looks at Rivka and says, I grew up in Avram's house. It was a no-brainer for me. It was batting practice. But this is Rivka. She's a Sadekes Ben Rasha. I'm not saying that. Don't use the word Russia, not a direct equation. But people that come from situations that are more challenging, you should really be you should respect those people. If you have friends like that, oh my goodness, I went to this high school, and in this high school it was obvious. I went to Mishmar, and the summer programs that they stressed, and the rabbanim that I had, and this boy, look where he came from. He came from fill in the blanks, and then for him, you know, just he kept halacha really seriously, and he's serious about his davening, he's serious about his meaning. That should be something you should gain from. And then Rivka looks at Yitzchak and says, wow, what a pure life you've had and experience. You grew up in the lap of religious luxury. You had such great role models. And she's davening desperately to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, don't make me get the... I just want Yitzchak to be the father of my children. It's a very, very touching moment in terms of marriage. Really, if you're looking for the keys to marriage, really one of them is respecting and validating your spouse. Okay? Far, far before R is the first R. People talk about romance. Romance is important. Don't ever get married without it. I'll be as clear as I can. Some people say, Rebbe, how do I know? Maybe I like her as a friend. You know, this isn't my first rodeo, guys. So listen to me very, very carefully. I'll be very explicit. Ezra Zimbel, wake up. Kasser, wake up. Do not marry a girl until you have problems with your kavanah and shmon esrei. Okay, that's the litmus. Now you could say, I already have problems with my How do I know? Trust me, you'll know. Okay, there's no such thing as, you know, how do you know? Chemistry, you're not a test tube. Okay, if you don't have problems with your kavana, don't get married. Okay? You need romance, you need that magic, you need to be googly-eyed, fluttering heart, feel like mush. You know, she calls you all sorts of names that you make fun of other people when they're called that name. You make your friends crazy, telling them stories about her, and then shut up already. We know you love her. Let's get on. Let's get back to the game. Things like that. Okay? But that's obvious, but that's not the heart and soul of marriage. The heart and soul of marriage is respect and validation of the other. And you see, as odd as it sounds, because one can claim that Yitzchak and Rivka had a marriage, at least on the surface, when you look at it simplistically, they weren't on the same frequency. Right, Avram and Sarah get on the same page. Yaakov and Rachel, they struggle to. There's moments where they're not, but Yitzchak and Rivka, they miss the boat. Yitzchak sees Yaakov, Esav and Rivka, and Rivka's maneuvering around Yitzchak. So that's an important conversation about marriage also. You know, keep in mind, we have very, very biased and stereotypical definitions of marriage. I'll just give you one example. In the Haredi world, there are very, very clear domains of marriage. Basically, the house is the woman's responsibility and it's her role, and the man isn't involved more or less. Again, it's not as black and white, but one could claim that that's... And people say, what do you mean? They're so chauvinistic. So no, sometimes clear boundaries of differences help create clarity and expectation, commitment. You do your... Just don't be simplistic about judging based on the marriages you've seen or the way you want to plan your marriage. Marriages have many, many different dynamics in which they work. Obviously, there can't be chas v'shalom ways that disrespect or, God forbid, inconvenience or worse the other spouse. But there are many, many different ways that marriages work. And you'd be surprised if you read told us a little more carefully. This may just be the best marriage because there's really no external clashes between Yitzchak and Rivka, as there is between Avraham and Sarah, and in part because Rivka and Yitzchak are the only couple that don't introduce another wife into the equation. But that may be not just causative, but also reflective. But in any event, I don't know how we got to this, but Yitzchak is looking at Rivka in awe, and Rivka is looking at Yitzchak in awe. But we're not talking about marriage. This is not the pre-shir marriage conversation. This is the pre-shir tefillah conversation. Which means that sometimes you help your davening by looking at someone else davening. You would think, oh, that's artificial, that's a waste of my time, that's a distraction. But sometimes they're physical, either people are... You know, sometimes when I have a hard time davening, I look at Rav Lichtenstein's Makom, which to me resonates with a lot of meaning, or Rav Amital's Makom. What do you mean? Isn't that paganism? When did you become a chassid, Rabbi Taragin? Don't you know all chassidus is idolatry of the Rebbe? No, but human beings are human beings. I'm not going in. I just wanted to wake you up a little bit. And there are a lot of trigger points and a lot of ways to inspire yourself. And there's nothing wrong with... I mean, ask yourself, don't answer the question, who do you see in the base matters as a person that you look up to the way they daven? It could be a friend. It could be an older boy. It could be a Rebbe. It could be... Nothing wrong with that. And hopefully your whole life you should be able to identify people who you can walk in and not as a contest. Oh, here's someone else who is 5 minutes. I have to be 5'10". I'm just saying, okay, I like the way that person's davening, and now in my own space, you know, I'll create my improvements of davening. One of the most important tools in life, some of you know, the machlokas in the Gemara, when you make a binyanah, when you, or gzera shava, when you compare two halachas, the base halacha, A, and the extract, or the derived halacha, B. So it's a machlokas tanaim. Who knows the machlokas tanaim? Don, mina, mina. What's the other shita? Don, mina. Anyone? It's all over. One is an exact parity. You make a gzera shava between halacha A and B becomes A. Or don mina v'uki basra. You take certain halachas from A, but then you adjust them to B. You adjust them in the context of B, and they could be a little different. So gzera shava isn't an identification. It's not exactly the same, but you learn achveis zrika sadam, but now since it's an asham, it's going to be a little different zrika. But you learn not one halacha, achveis pig, or whatever. You learn a halacha from chatas tasham, but now you adjust it for asham. That's really what Avodas Hashem is about. Don mina v'uki basra. You look at people. You don't want to mimic them. You're you. You don't want to walk and talk like them. You don't want to walk and talk like me. One of Rav Amital's, trust me, you know, but one of Rav Amital's favorite lines was, "Ani la rotze amitalim ketanim." I don't want little amitals. Because you know that's not the path to Avodas Hashem. You have to find your own identity. You have to be prepared to differ with your Rebbe or differ with someone, but there's a common denominator, a common goal. One of my favorite Rav Amital stories is that Rav Lichtenstein's 70th birthday. This is about 11, 12 years ago. Maybe a little. So it was Erev Shabbos. It was either Lag BaOmer or Yom Yerushalayim. And it was just, I mean, it was nightmares. One long speech after another on a hot Friday afternoon in Yerushalayim without air conditioning. It was hard. And Rav Amital was always the last speaker, but typically everyone would steal his time, so he'd have 30 seconds to speak before Shabbos. So that was what it was. Like 2:15, everyone had had enough. And Rav Amital could just speak, and he had to be very quick. So he got up and he said, "Ani agid lachem, ma hevdel ben Rav Lichtenstein l'shar Rashi Yeshiva. Rov Rabbanim rotzim chasidim. Rav Lichtenstein ata rotze talmidim. Ma hevdel ben chasid l'talmid? Chasid makshiv l'kol davar sh'arav omer. Talmid makshiv l'shum davar sh'arav omer." And everyone like laughed and brought down the house. And, no, it doesn't mean you should disobey your Rebbe. You should disobey what I just said. You'll agree with me. You should disobey my recommendation to disobey me. But it means that you're your own person. You find your own domino vukibasa. But this is a very nice imagery that, yeah, you don't just have to inspire yourself based on chaste avos and thinking of makom and kvuras avos. And look at the guy next to you, just davens really nicely. I don't know. I get inspired by looking at the Darkeinu kids. I mean, well, what does it mean for a person to be in that stage and in that condition of life and to come to davening and to stand in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that represents a certain, it does something to me. And the whole range, obviously, there's doesn't have to be one or the other. There's a whole range of people, different states of davening. If you want to daven well, trust me. If you want to improve your davening, get on the bus during Ben Ezmanim, or if you want tomorrow, give you a special heter. And go daven a Shacharis, or go for a Shabbos and spend it in the hospital. People are really davening. That you'll see people davening. You'll see people coming down because it's Israel, it's Israeli hospitals. People will come down with oxygen tanks carrying and IVs, and people have just been through surgery. And you walk away saying, yeah, people really daven for needs. And okay, those are obviously extreme situations, but look at someone, they have a simcha, how much they enjoy their davening or their or an avel. And, you know, we always feel like that avel when they first come to shul and that first Rosh Kaddish. In the middle of their availus, obviously, it's just become routine. But that first Shabbos, or that first week, obviously the first week is in the base of Avil, but there's something very powerful about that first Kaddish when an Avil comes to Shul. That's the Kaddish in Shul. It's such a lush world of interacting with people davening, which is why we're stressing to you, davening is not just a math equation, me and 10 people, and I'll find the 10 people wherever they are. It's a very holistic experience in which you feed off of people and you feed other people, and there's a lot happening beyond just me, 10 people, kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. And that's why me and kavua, makom kavua, people you daven with, takes so much importance because it really creates the fabric of davening. Okay, that was a little longer than I expected, but Mitz Hashem will continue Parshas Vayetze tomorrow, because I'm not going to be here for Vayetze. Okay. Let us finish off what we discussed yesterday.